I'm going to come over here to the lectern for the information about the hymns that we're going to sing in this section. These hymns were all suggested by you, the members of this congregation, on the feedback forms that we had a couple of weeks ago. Maybe it was a little over a month ago. I don't remember exactly when. But as part of the announcements, we asked, put down the names of your favorite hymns on the attendance cards, and we'll include them all in a service at one point or another. We've got about maybe a third to a half of them in one way or another in this service today. And so I'm going to say a little bit about a few of the things that we've already sung or listened to, because we're kind of running short on time here. I don't want to use everything, but I want to tell you a little bit about each of the pieces of music that we've used so far. First of all, in the prelude, that was Be Thou My Vision. And the history on that is St. Patrick in Ireland defied an Irish king's edict that restricted the lighting of candles on Easter Eve. No one was allowed to light any fires until one of the pagan spring festivals had occurred. Well, Patrick chose instead to honor God and not the leaders there, so he went ahead and lit the candles. And the king was so impressed with his behavior and his devotion that he let him continue doing that. And then about 300 or 400 years later, a monk in Ireland named Dallan Forgal penned the words to that, and then later it was added to music. And it was an interesting thing about the history of it. The original fire that was supposed to be part of that pagan festival was to be held on Slane Hill. And the name of the tune that Be Thou My Vision is normally sung to is Slane. And I think it came back to the same point. Okay, we then sang the Church is One Foundation. That was a response to some teaching that was considered unorthodox at the time by the Bishop of Natal. That created a schism within the South African church. And Samuel Stone was then inspired to write the hymns based on the Apostles' Creed. And there were 12 hymns in that sequence. And the Church is One Foundation is from the ninth article of that set of 12 hymns. And we used Amazing Grace as the prayer response. I'll tell you a little bit about that. Amazing Grace was written by the English poet and clergyman John Newton, and it was published in 1779, the message of forgiveness and redemption. Well, Newton wrote those words based on his personal experience. He had been in the Royal Navy and had gotten involved in the slave trade. And in 1748, he was in a violent storm. He called out for God's mercy, and that was the start of his conversion, and he got out of the slave trade at that point, and then later wrote the words to Amazing Grace. And that was part of a sermon that he did. He went into the ministry and did that sermon in 1773. We also, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. That was written by Joseph M. Scriven in the early or mid-1800s when he was 25 years old. He was in love and was going to be married, and the day before his wedding, his fiancée died in a tragic drowning accident. And he couldn't take that, and he left his homeland and started a new life in Canada. He fell in love again, but his new fiancée became ill and died before the wedding. So he was not having a good time. But around that time, he learned that his mother was ill back in Ireland, and he couldn't get back there. So he wrote a letter of comfort, and he enclosed a poem that he wrote, which is the words to What a Friend We Have in Jesus. Okay, at this point, we're going to do He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, and I think I still have some. That was originally an American spiritual. It was published in 1927. And it was introduced to folk singing enthusiasts in 1933 by Frank Warner, who collected it at Nags Head, North Carolina. And it became a favorite and was popularized by Marian Anderson. Okay, let's go. He's got the whole world in his hands. Verses 1 and 4 on this one. This is the only one it's not 1 and 2. 1 and 4.
The next hymn we're going to sing this morning is Here I Am, Lord. Here I Am, Lord, also known as I, the Lord of Sea and Sky, is a well-known Christian hymn written by Dan Shute in 1981. Its words are based on Isaiah 6, 8, and 1 Samuel 3. It was originally written for use in the Catholic liturgy. Despite its Catholic origins, Shute's hymn has also sung in many Protestant worship services, and is found in most Christian hymnals, being translated into over 20 languages. A 2008 survey conducted by the United Methodist Church found this hymn to be rated second favorite behind Amazing Grace. Here I Am, Lord, verses 1 and 2. How Great Thou Art is a Christian hymn based on a Swedish poem written by Carl Gustav Boberg in Sweden in 1885. The melody is a Swedish folk song. It was translated into English by British missionary Stuart K. Hine, who also added two original verses of his own composition. These verses were inspired line upon line amidst unforgettable experiences in the Carpathian Mountains. In a village to which he had climbed, Mr. Hine stood in the street singing a gospel hymn and reading aloud John chapter 3. Among the sympathetic listeners was a local village schoolmaster. A storm was gathering, and when it was evident that no further travel could be made that night, the friendly schoolmaster offered his hospitality. Awe-inspiring was the mighty thunder echoing through the mountains, and it was this impression that inspired the words. It was popularized by George Beverly Shea and Cliff Barrows during the Billy Graham Crusades. How great there are, verses 1 and 2. The Old Rugged Cross, a popular Christian song written in 1912 by evangelist and song leader George Bernard. George Bernard was a native of Youngstown, Ohio, but was reared in Iowa. After his conversion in a Salvation Army meeting, he and his wife became brigade leaders before leaving the organization for the Methodist Church. As a Methodist evangelist, Bernard wrote the first verse of the gospel song, The Old Rugged Cross, in Albion, Michigan, in the fall of 1912. He finished the lyrics in January of 1913. Charles H. Gabriel, a well-known gospel song composer, helped Bernard with the harmonies. The Old Rugged Cross uses a sentimental, popular song form with a verse-chorus pattern in 3-4 time, and it speaks of the writer's Christian experience rather than his adoration of God. The Old Rugged Cross, verses 1 and 2.
Thank you.
In the Garden was written by C. Austin Miles, who was a pharmacist turned hymn writer and church music director. He was also an amateur photographer. One day in March 1912, while in his darkroom waiting for film to develop, Miles had a profound spiritual experience in which he saw an incredible vision of Mary Magdalene visiting the empty tomb. He saw her leave the tomb and walk into a garden where she met the Master and heard him speak her name. When Miles came to himself, his nerves were vibrating and his muscles tense. The words to a new song were filling his mind and heart. He quickly wrote out the lyrics to In the Garden, and later that evening composed the musical score. The song was published that same year and became a theme song for the Billy Sunday Evangelist Crusades. In the Garden, verses 1 and 2. In This Very Room was composed in 1979 by Ron and Carol Harris. People have wondered about the room that was the inspiration. In truth, the song will always be about whatever room it is sung in at any given moment. But the genesis for this song actually happened in a most unlikely place, a big old lonely hotel room at the Fairmont Hotel in New Orleans, Louisiana. Ron had been working in that very hotel as conductor for Carol Lawrence, Maria in West Side Story, for about a week. This particular night, after the show, he went back to his room, and before going to bed, he called home to his wife and children in Los Angeles to talk for a few minutes. During that conversation, he really ached to be home with them, and that was the inspiration for this song, In This Very Room, verses 1 and 2.
Thank you.
leadeth me. In Boston, in 1862, preacher Joseph Gilmore was a guest speaker at the First Baptist Church of Philadelphia. That Wednesday night, he spoke on Psalm 23, focusing on the phrase, "He leadeth me beside still waters." Because the Civil War was going on, this subject was dear to the hearts of many people, including his own heart. After the service, he and his wife talked for many hours at the home of Deacon Watson about that message and the subject of leadership of God. As they talked, he took out a pen and paper and began to write. Before the night was over, he had written all the verses of this psalm. He handed them to his wife and promptly forgot about them. 3 years later, one night, he had a speaking engagement at the Second Baptist Church of Rochester, New York. He was a candidate for a possible pastorate there. Their hymnal was one that was foreign to him, so upon entering the auditorium, he picked it up to see what kind of songs were in it. To his astonishment, the first song his eyes fell on was his own, written in the home of Deacon Watson. Unbeknownst to him, his wife had sent it to the Watchman and Reflector, a paper published in Boston. William Bradbury had set the words to music and put them in a hymnal. He leadeth me. John Newton, who Jack already spoke about, what authored Amazing Grace, is also the author of Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken. He was one of the most influential evangelical Anglicans of his day. Newton wrote hymns and enjoyed the friendship of troubled but brilliant hymn writer and poet William Cowper. In 1779, Newton and Cowper published some of their hymns in a pious collection called Only Hymns. Included in Book 1 was Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken. Newton built this hymn around 7 biblical passages. It quickly gained popularity wherever English language hymns were sung. Would you please stand and sing verses 1 and 2 of Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken?